Okie doke. Well, here we are for our second edition of a program about the Climate Collaboratory, as well as the impact of figures such as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and most importantly, the kind of work that people are doing on the ground. And you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And we can just jump right in with Sue Blythe and Shannon Crossbear.
And hello, I'm Sue Blythe, and I live in Gainesville, Florida, which is a university town in Alachua County. And we are actually doing a Martin Luther King World House as almost a process of community development. We call it building community in the changing climate. And of course, we've got our beloved community with Martin Luther King. And we hope to develop in this year more connections with people of faith and goodwill who love to think of a world that works for all. That's the goal of the Martin Luther King Commission. Actually, that's the goal of We the World, to create a world that works for all. And I am partnering with the Martin Luther King Commission and the United Nations Association. And maybe I can pass it to Shannon for now, and I'd like to come back to what is actually happening here. What's happening there in your part of the world, Shannon?
Great. Well, hello, everybody. My English name is Shannon Crossbear, and I am located on the homelands of the Lake Superior Ojibwe in northern Minnesota, and that's where I'm speaking from. And yes, we were talking about Martin Luther King and what his concepts for a beloved community were, including the earth itself and all of her inhabitants. What we're doing here is collecting the stories. And as you were talking, Sue, what I was thinking about was what a wonderful opportunity we have to really reflect about how those things are connected, how the vision that Martin Luther King held became part of our collective vision in terms of building, this world house where we all need to learn to live together. And even at the time, how maybe we thought about that in one way, in terms of us as human beings, but also now expanding to say, what other life do we need to include in this conversation, in this world house, and how do we create it? And so part of that creation is, if we're going to do it differently, is really having that community-wide conversation or, consultation to say, what does it look like? How do we merge your vision and my vision and the Earth's vision and Catherine's vision together to create this world house that works for everybody? And I think we're in a very important time because this is the time of collecting that community-wide consultation. And so all the ways that we do that are valid and necessary because we're, wonderful, complex human beings. So whether it's telling the stories, writing the play, making the music, having the conversation, in whatever way that we do that, planting the seeds, harvesting from the earth, all of those kinds of things. However we do that, that we're doing it and in a way that is supporting each other. So right here, right now, part of that means being in this conversation today with both of you and ultimately having other people react to this conversation in the future when they hear it. So,
excellent. So I'm Catherine, Catherine Davis. Turns out I live in Kings County. I looked it up, Brooklyn, New York. And the community here is so broad and diverse, it's hard to identify a single community. So I tend to fall back on what my family and my friends and my coworkers as my community more than thinking of it broadly. And I think that Martin Luther King Day, but more importantly, Martin Luther King's life is a unifying factor in so many ways. I felt that the movement itself, though I was too young to be aware at the time, was very broadening in terms of perspective. So Martin Luther King's movement was more than just about the freedom and liberation of Black people or former slaves. It brought together people from all nations and all races. If you look out at a film of any of those marches, you'll see a very multiplicity of people in those crowds. So I think that was one of the unique things about Martin Luther King Jr. as a leader, is that it wasn't isolated and pocketed into a smaller group. It was a much broader movement that brought a lot of people in who wouldn't have known what was going on, you know, in a community in another borough or in another state. Or, you know, he just opened the window, I think, for cross-pollination of so many issues. So that's what he is for me. And I see that as how he's being regarded from the people that I know, whom I would consider my community. And I would also say that the radio work and doing the promotion includes my community, the people who will be listening to this, which will be another diverse group of people. So I think that's wonderful, because it can bring people in who might not otherwise know about the efforts that is happening across the country and the world with the work being done by we.
So if I may, I would like to share my own personal story of a special day that's happening on January 15th. It's my birthday, it's my father's birthday, and it's Martin Luther King's birthday. And so that's kind of the order in which I became aware of race relations and what's going on as a process of the coming together of the peoples of the world. And so my own story starts in 1947, and I will go immediately to my dad, who was the early influence in my life. And he was born in 1918 in South Georgia, and grew up in a very clearly racist society. Things were, as I grew up, I recognized, you know, the division, that there was definitely the other side of the tracks, where my grandparents and all my cousins lived on one side, and all the people who worked for them came from the other side. And so having Black help was the norm for everyone that I knew in that part of the world. And it wasn't until I became aware of the civil rights movement in the 60s. I was in high school, and it came as a shock. Oh my gosh, of course, there's this inequality that I grew up in and didn't really have an understanding of. my memories of all of that was why, I wondered as a little girl, why are there white and colored water fountains and bathrooms? And why, you know, what is the difference? And does the water taste different in the two different fountains? Anyway, I just remember questioning, but not really questioning until the 60s. And I became aware of Martin Luther King, whose birthday, by the way, was in 1929. And so I really followed from that time when I first became aware what was going on. And of course, the March on Washington, I watched on TV and was profoundly touched by what was happening. And I Have a Dream speech became my dream as well. And then in the 80s, I became a Baha'i and I learned that it was my responsibility to overcome prejudice in my own heart. And by that time, I had three young girls, so I tried my best to raise them in a spirit of loving and appreciating all the peoples of the world. And then I came to Gainesville, where I live now, and worked actually with the Martin Luther King Commission for a while, and just became aware of what was going on in the community in race relations. My Baha'i community also was very much involved in working in that issue. And so it became part of regular life for me. And what I'm doing here and now is continuing this effort to build unity in my community and connect the different organizations that are working on the same issues. And usually you see different groups working in silos. And I think as we learn to work together, we can make a much bigger impact. And I would like to just share what we presented. Also, bringing the children into this process has been very important to me. And so I'd like to share a video that we made for UN Day a couple of years ago. Sorry. Welcome to the Climate Collaboratory. We're creating a blueprint for a world house.
Attention, attention. It's Code Red for Humanity. The planet is getting way too warm. The tree of life is in danger, and many species are going extinct. We must escape this climate calamity.
We need a blueprint for a better future. We just happen to have one. In 2015, the United Nations adopted 17 Sustainable Development Goals.
We need to win the global goals by 2030 if we're going to escape this climate calamity.
2030? That's when I will graduate from high school.
People all over the world are helping to make a better future. We want to collect stories about how they are doing that.
We're looking for climate collaborators who will help young people like us build a world that works for all. That's 100% of humanity and the community of life on Earth, our home.
We also want stories and songs and books and movies and a lot more stuff that will help kids like me and Rebecca understand what the blueprint is all about.
We are living the story that our great-grandchildren will tell many, many years from now. In January and February, we'll use the Blueprint for a Better Future to help build Martin Luther King's World House.
In his Nobel Peace Prize lecture in 1964, Dr. King said, "We have inherited a big house, a great world house, in which we have to live together, black and white, Easterners and Westerners, Gentiles and Jews, Catholics and Protestants, Muslim and Hindu, a family unduly separated in ideas, culture, and interests who, because we can never again live without each other, must learn somehow in this big world to live with each other."
We want to build a world house where we can learn to live together.
We have the blueprint to build the big world house.
We need you to help us make a world that works for people and the planet for many generations to come.
You can be a leader in our community-wide climate conversation to action program.
Visit our website at climatecollaboratory.org and learn how you can be a climate collaborator in your home, school, and community.
Join us on the world to 2030, 2050, and beyond.
We need to wake up. We need to wise up.
So that's what we're up to in Alachua County, Florida, and hoping for wonderful things to evolve as this program develops. We call it a collaborative storytelling adventure, and we're inviting people to tell their own stories about how, you know, Martin Luther King impacted their lives, how they're working for a more sustainable world in terms of helping the people and the planet. So thank you.
That's a great
story. So lovely to watch. Yeah, those kids are so cute. Very expressive. And, you know, you see that innocence of possibility. It's nice to see children being raised with an idea of possibilities and that they are empowered to make a difference in the future. So that sounds like a good program to me.
Thank you. And we're designing it so that it can be replicated in other communities. So maybe even in yours.
Excellent. And how do people get in touch with you for the radio?
Yeah, so my email is Sue Blythe, SueBlythe, at we.net is probably the best way. So we are with the world, we.net. And website again is climatecollaboratory.org, and it is a project of We the World.
Very good. So do you have a story, Shannon?
Always have a story, Kathy. I'm a storyteller. But I was reflecting as Sue was telling her story about, you know, a couple of different things. And I was in a space of great gratitude for my life journey and my experiences, because when she was talking about, you know, her awareness of civil rights and when that came about and kind of her introduction into Martin Luther King, I was very fortunate and that I grew up in a community and in a family where civil rights was at the table every single day. and so that, you know, that led to a very diverse table, a literal table with people around it that came from, you know, different places, that spoke different languages, that and that was very rich for me, I think. And also at the same time, trying to find our place in the conversation as Indigenous peoples. And so some of the things that were happening during the marches, like, you know, so the level of involvement was to the point where I remember as a child being in a church in the Midwest with my dad, where a clandestine meeting was taking place around organizing some action, you know, wasn't specific about what action was being taken. But I also remember being in that rural community when the sun was setting as a 7-year-old being called in because of the sunset law, that we could not be outside after dark, right? And so wasn't about street lights. It wasn't about any of that. It was about that sunset law and the panic in our parents' voices as they called us in to make sure that we got inside, right? So those are things that I think about. But when I think about what are we doing, where are we at now in that conversation about how do we heal this hoop of humanity? And certainly Martin Luther King was a leader who added to that conversation in huge ways, right? Huge ways. And grateful, and all the other leaders that we have. And so, you know, and I reflect back to you know, my friend Menasha from Standing Rock, who said, you know, this is what it takes, you know, to not know each other, but to understand each other. It takes sharing space, sharing meals, sharing conversation, sharing stories, you know, and that is that whole, it's about relationship, right? We need to heal the relationships. And so whatever ways that we do that work, right? And so the relationship with each other, the earth, you know, so here I'm kind of doing that, of course, with others, because you can't do it any other way, is holding that space for those conversations to happen among people that they might not necessarily happen with organically. Because people we're all seventh graders who went to the dance and we're going to hang out with the people we know. You know, it's really scary to go across and just do that thing. So how do we encourage in safe ways and support people in having those interactions and those conversations? And, you know, that's why I think things like music and entertainment and those things have been so unifying in many, many ways, right? So here what that looks like is that I live in a small rural community and we have very different populations within this rural community. Even though we're sparsely populated, there's the 10 people over there and the 10 people over there. But sometimes those kinds of, depending on all the things that separate us into them and us, age, cultures, you know, lifestyles, religion, all of that kind of stuff, that to find those places where we can bring those groups together in a way that everybody is participating and it's working. I mean, we have our little town hall, we're bringing community people together, we're having those conversations one-on-one, we're, you know, doing that. And then on a larger level, working with, you know, I had to challenge my own, how do I step out of my own, you know, circle, so to speak, so that I can really engage with those that may think differently than I do, or, you know, or express themselves differently than I do. And that's a personal challenge. I continue to challenge myself to do that. I continue to invite myself to do that in a courageous way. Because I'll give you an example, is that I've been very uncomfortable with organized religions, especially Christian organized religions. That comes from my own historical trauma and exposure to those that were harmed in great ways by those institutions. And so it's always been an uncomfortable place for me to hang out. But I had an opportunity to kind of hang out in one of those places in a Christian writers group and begin to contribute to a process around healing the divides. And that was how we came together. And And so I think it's those things. It's about, you know, really being able to get into that place that we seem to have left behind in terms of even civil discourse in our world, right? Where we have such a difficult time of being able to do that with kindness and knowing that, you know, it takes time to work through how I see the world and how you see the world so that we can get to the we world, right? So that's some of the stuff that's happening that I think contributes to the conversation around how we're creating together that world, right? That's a world house that is inclusive.
Nice. Well, some thoughts came up for me as the two of you were talking. The first thing I thought about was in watching your children, Sue, be they grand or great grands or diaspora of children, how receptive they are. And it strikes me that it's that level of receptivity that children have that on the other side contributes to what we regard to be racism. They get exposed to it in their homes by their families, even before they go to school in the most part. And so it's good to see young people exposed to thinking more expansively. I think that's something that's needed on a wide, very wide scale.
May I say something about that family? I met them. They're not related to me except through my human family. I met them on the 20th anniversary call of the Earth Charter International. And so the Earth Charter is a statement that was put together with global consultation in civil society, just people getting together and talking about what we feel we need to make a world that works for all. And so I feel like this is the same vision that Martin Luther King held out for us. This is like another version of it. And so in this, it was a Zoom call with people all over the world who love the Earth Charter. And we listened to the original people who helped to launch it. And we listened to people who are doing different things in their part of the world. And at the end, the last presentation was from the older two. They were 9 and 11 at the time. And they were saying, this is all wonderful, but you're missing something. And it's us. We need to be involved in your programs so you can teach us how to do what you're doing. And we have ideas too, they said, to this global consultation. And we want to develop our programs. And so I contacted them after that. And I said, well, I want children to help develop my program. So can we collaborate? And I worked with the whole family for about 2 years. And we just really made a lot of progress together. And so right now we're taking a break. I feel confident that we will get back together to carry on this process. And I just feel like kids want to do this. I'm meeting a lot of them, especially in high schools and college that are working for a world that works for all.
That's lovely. That's lovely to know that history. And they were motivated, self-motivated to involve themselves. But I think that's something we could all pay attention to as we go forward in whatever groups, us three and whomever is listening or watching, is to have a seat at the table for children to give their part. They probably see the world a lot more clearly than us older folks. and they have the most investment and time to experience whatever it is that we create for them. So they should definitely have a seat at the table. So I love that about what you're doing. And the other thing that really struck me was when you were talking about in your community where everybody had help, you know, colored help, people coming in. And it's funny because historically that's what, you know, my grandmothers mostly did, because it was the only work available to them. And so I, for me, the whole MLK story is a little bit bittersweet in the sense that before his death, my parents had really shielded me from racism. I mean, I experienced it as a child, but it seemed like not a, a big deal. And I think that a lot of the politics and a lot of the horrendous things that were going on in the South and in the world, my parents shielded us from. We had no idea growing up. We were just kids out playing with the other kids. But, you know, upon that violence and becoming aware of it, it shifted my state of being in the world. It was like I had to rediscover who I was and what the world was. So it was a very kind of poignant thing. But I, you know, so it had an impact on me that way. And it took me a long time to get to the point of really being able to discover my own history, because it was so horrific as a child that I couldn't cope with it. So I just think it's one of those things that it's a little bit bittersweet, because the innocence was lost as a result of that, I think, for a lot of us. But he brought a lot of hope, so that's also a good thing. So that's my story.
So please forgive, we have a storm coming through and there's thunder and lightning and a lot of rain. So yeah, it gets exciting.
Yeah, Catherine, thanks for sharing that. That's a, just that whole, because then what that made me think of was reflecting back and going, when did I lose that? Like, really, was it? I think it was that night I talked about. That was kind of my time of like, the world is not safe. You know, and that awareness. So, you know, and you know, and we're all trying, you know, we're in a process of trying to heal from those things collectively, right? And that's part of the process that I think it takes is to kind of, you know, I was in a discussion not too long ago around kind of this idea of how do we heal those deep wounds, right? Specifically, they were talking about the boarding schools and some of the ongoing intergenerational trauma that has resulted in that and so harmed along the way. And so, you know, in that discussion, there were people that just were, you know, that was still at a, which surprised me, but we're still at a point of saying, well, you know, we can apologize, but we didn't, you know, does it really even mean anything, because we weren't the ones that, you know, that happened a couple of generations ago or, you know, whatever. And really seeing that they didn't understand the power of acknowledgement, right? And, you know, the rest is all the details, but you first have to have acknowledgement that harm has, that we have been harmed. And I say we, because that's the other acknowledgement, is that by those things, we have all been harmed, you know? And so having that conversation about, so now, you know, if we have acknowledgement, what's the next step in reconciliation? Because it can't stop at acknowledgement. It has to go to the next. And I think that, you know, I'm so grateful for all of those that came before us so that we could be, you know, we're having this opportunity to have this conversation. And there was a time where we would not have this opportunity. And not just, you know, even with the technology, which I have a love-hate relationship with, is, you know, is part of that process of that we can come together and we can have this conversation, right? And share our experiences, you know, and reflect upon them to kind of say, okay, now what? Now what is the next step in the reconciliation process of how do we become better relatives? How do we really do the work of that? And part of that is the work that you're doing, Sue, of, you know, holding space, and definitely Catherine for being able to put on a radio show to elevate these things that are happening, where they're happening and how they're happening, so that somebody says in their, you know, living room, car, you know, office, wherever they may be, to say, oh, you know what? I could do that. I could have a conversation. Or, oh, I think what I'll do is I'll go in and see what's happening with the Climate Collaboratory, because, you know, my heart just really is drawn toward that. Or, you know, those kinds of things those, you know, what I call the spark that people can. So I'm just saying to people, everybody, you know, everybody, it's going to take everybody for that world house to be created, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's going to take us all, which is interesting because as terrible as things were back then, in some ways it seems worse now. Not so much in that one group is attacking another group, but every person seems to be attacking their next person. You know, there's just no coming together in the world the way it used to be. And I think a good step forward is for us to think about what we're doing in our own lives, how we are treating other people in our own lives and in our professional lives in whatever space, but also to be willing to stand up to injustice. So when Martin Luther King did that, it cost him his life. It probably won't be such a high price for us at this point. I'm not saying it wouldn't be, but probably not. That we could begin to engage and encourage engagement that's more peaceful and more tolerant. So I think it becomes a need to bring back some kind of moral code or principles with regard to how we are with each other in the larger world, to not be so quick to retort some smart alecky remark on social media, and maybe be more thoughtful about the engagement, because beyond the tangible world, I also do energy work, and everything has an energy that impacts the whole. So if you have millions of people hating on each other, it's going to create a toxic environment for us all to live in. And if we can be more accepting and loving with each other, even if we disagree with that person, it's doing it more for ourselves than making excuses for some outlandish behavior. I just think that's part of the journey to really look for peace inside of whatever conflict we may be confronted with.
Yeah, and so I think one of the things that you said, Catherine, that just kind of was like, you know, how wedded we are. Things are not like they used to be, right? They're not like they used to be. And not that it was great, but it was, it appears reflectively to have been better, right? And I think sometimes when we at least for myself, when I get stuck, I have to stop and think, is it really the past that I want to reclaim? Or what is it within that past that I feel like was a loss, you know? And how might those things look in the context of my children and grandchildren? Like, you know, if we're not going to have the same kinds of opportunities for connection in the same ways that we had before, what is it that we can create? How can we create what we need to create? Because it is about connection, right? It's about, you know, I am less likely to, even if you disagree with me, I am less likely to treat you badly if I have a relationship with you. If I have come to learn and care about you, I'm probably going to be at least a little more tolerant, which is what happens on that social media, is you don't have that relationship, right? It's all words on paper. We're missing. We don't even get the facial stuff. We don't get that, you know, those pieces that are so informative to us and that create that emotional bond and connection of we as human beings, we as part of the two-legged nation, right? I there are things that I think I do feel like we need to create what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in a civil world, right? I mean, the only way that I know about doing that is, you know, reflective on every leader that I feel has said it before, and that is to demonstrate it. We have to just continue to demonstrate what it is we mean, right? What it is that, if we're about healing, then we have to, gentle healing, we have to demonstrate what does that look like? What does it mean? Not just be able to, you know, to have those things that I said earlier in this conversation about how grateful I was to have the input I had when I was young, because I remember this great, I think it's really been very helpful to me in my life, was that in where my dad did some writing, he had on this wall, he had this saying, and it just said, the first action in education is to say the words, I disagree, I respectfully disagree. And I was like, it seems like such an odd thing, right, to have on your wall, right? And yet, you know, as I have grown, is how important that is to hold that space of both the respect and the disagreement. And we have somehow lost the opportunity to hold those two things at the same time, right? Respect and disagreement. And so I'm still learning about that for myself. You know, I catch myself. Am I open to respectfully hear something that appears to be so distant from my thinking, right? And then, you know, going through that process, is it just distant from my thinking, but is it also distant from my feeling? Like, I have to separate those things, even though it all works together, right? So I don't know if any of that made sense, but you know, it's how do we get there?
Yeah. Well, I think we are demonstrating how to get there by the work that we're doing in the world, for sure. So I think it makes perfect sense, and it's well needed. I think a lot of people are lost in this temperament of hostility that we have in the world at the moment. and people are longing for connection and community and a state of inner peace. I think those are universal things that people want to have as part of their life. So in some measure, we're demonstrating it. And I think we have to find a balance, however, because I'm an activist in some regard, and it isn't enough for me personally to just be happy in my own little bubble. I can do that pretty effectively, actually, through different spiritual practices, but I'm concerned about the whole world. You know, the we of all of us is an important thing to me. So there has to be forays out there into interfacing with people who would be hostile. And I understand it well, because New York is such a political place. And the place where I broadcast from is a very political place. And there can be a lot of toxicity in politics. You know, people have really good beliefs and they want to do good things, but they don't know how to be wholesome human beings. So it can become a very toxic environment around people who are doing good work for the world, but don't know how to be good people. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in that area. And especially in the activist community, my sense is that Shadon and Sue, both of you live more in a family-based environment where there's children and grandchildren and cousins and uncles and aunts and all kinds of people. And I don't anymore have that experience. Most of my elders are gone. And I'm the elder now. So it's a different world. It's a different world. And I find that it takes a real skill set, a real practice, like you were saying, it's a work in progress, to be able to navigate an environment where people are toxic. And I think that that's part of what's going on in the world. People are just toxic. Too much bad media, too much bad food, too much bad environment. People are toxic. And it comes through in ways that impact all of us. So I don't know if that means anything either. It just came through.
Sure. It does mean a lot. And what I believe is that when we hear things, it starts in our own hearts and minds, that we want to find a positive way to think about what that is we're hearing and express it lovingly. And if it's accepted, fine. If it's not, fine, you go on. But I love the words of the Earth Charter. And it says, it's a definition of peace. It says, we recognize that peace is the wholeness of created by right relationships with oneself. So finding that inner peace that you're talking about is an important first step. And I think our job as elders, I feel, is providing helpful hints about how we have done that and others may do that. And then letting each person find that for themselves. And to continue the Earth Charter, recognize that peace is the wholeness created by right relationships with oneself, other persons. How do you do that in your life and in your community? Other cultures, which brings us into this whole human family idea, locally and globally, other persons, other cultures, other life, living, as Shannon was saying, in harmony with the natural world and the whole earth as our home. It's our home that we can see from space, and it's so beautiful, and we can live in that kind of peace that's been promised through all the ages, and wisdom traditions talk about a time of peace. So I believe we are learning to come into a global civilization that does live in peace. Mm-hmm. That's what I think we're doing.
Yeah, that's true. And one of the things we can take from the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is that even with him, if you look at his full body of work, there was a progression where he started out, you know, locally with the bus boycott. Towards the end of his life, he was talking about stop bombing Vietnam. And so he expanded from the local to the international in his life. And the other thing that we can, I think, take from Dr. King's life is that if you really look at the different things that he went through, you know, the dogs and being put in jail and the water cannons and all the things that people went through, and the kind of race conflict that was going on through that whole era, where even you could perform in a hotel as a musician, but you couldn't stay or eat in that hotel. You know, so there was this whole history that I think we need to begin to understand so that it isn't so easily dismissed, the progress that was made. It's easy now for us to look back and think it wasn't a big deal, but it was a really big deal. And I think we need to remember that even in the face of all that conflict, the one thing that makes Dr. Martin Luther King stand out is that he did not engage in the conflict, however bad it was, however hostile it was, however insane it was. He was very steady in his compass, his inner compass. And you don't see him lashing out at people. He was just steady with his message. And I think that's, to me, part of what you were saying, Shannon, about demonstrating. If we look at how he demonstrated his activism throughout his life, then we can learn a lot from that.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely, absolutely agree. I, you know, and as you were saying that, I was actually reflecting upon the mothers and the grandmothers that are standing as water protectors and how they're doing that, you know. And getting thrown in jail and, you know, having bad consequences, federal charges, all that kind of stuff happened day after day. And, you know, and yet they're still out there at the front line. And it's never aggressive. It's just standing there in love, trying to protect the water, which is the source of all life. So, you know, it's that's powerful. And that's and I think that's. Again, I love that, Calvin, just to remind us that you stand in your truth and you stand in your truth. You just do it. You demonstrate it. You know, you whatever pieces is there for you to do, that you do it. So, and I really appreciate, Catherine, what you said about, you know, where you're at in the world in terms of activism. And how that shows up, you know, because it's that activism that ignites things, right? It's that activism that that ignites change. And so every activist out there is so important to have that role.
Yeah, and sadly, we're out of time. So any last thoughts, Sue?
Well, I just feel like the conversations, consultations that Shannon was talking about are the key, that as we get together and talk about these issues, and what better time to do that than during Martin Luther King Month.
Excellent. And thank you both, Sue Blight, Shannon Crossbear, for joining me in this conversation, inspired, I must say, by the work of Sue Blight. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, but that's all we have for now.
Weathers any storm. How union makes earth heaven, the bond that we form. Shows we the world, the insects, the plants and birds. We're the stars in the skies, we create the words to describe what we see, to take us where we wanna be. We all wanna be free. We the mountains, reach for the sun. Everybody, part of everyone. We the world. Intentional kindness will take away the blindness. Peace and love will eventually find us. Enjoy your harmony, create your shares of unity. Spread positive vibes through our communities. We the world, we the people, envision. One that reaches all within the soul, that's the mission. Within the heart, joy.